Hey, y'all. Pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel. You can find it on any podcasting platform out there. Welcome back. It's almost basketball season, so we're going to go ahead and get y'all ready for basketball by talking about Shaka Smart, hot seat, or hottest seat. We'll discuss that. Gets you some realistic expectations for the Longhorns this year. Give you all a breakdown of every player on the team and what to expect out of them. And then give you all your pretend you're getting to know us. If y'all are looking for that for the beginning of the show, we're moving it to the end. See how we feel about that one.
Cool.
So let's go ahead and dive right into Shaka Smart. How important...
Metaphorically speaking.
No, let's do both.
Literally? You want to literally dive right in? That's...
Yeah, I mean, we can go to his house.
It's the 21st century. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. It's just... It's unusual.
This is some Oberyn Martell bullshit.
Oh, I got that reference.
I didn't. Mm-hmm. That one went straight over my head, Tim.
Game of Thrones.
Like most of your references do.
Oh, come on.
This is a beautiful, beautiful start to the show. A Tim reference that goes right over my head, and Johnny taking things wildly out of context and going with them.
I'm pretty sure I caught the context of where you were going right off the bat.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. No, you know what? Yeah, you're right. You caught me, Johnny. You caught me.
I've always known. You looked at Shaka a little too closely.
Kill the feed.
It's like a baking ham. You're just sitting there at the front of the oven, just like
for those of y'all who are new to the podcast,
welcome.
First off, you must know that Johnny and I met on Grindr, which is also where Tim and Johnny met.
No, we far predate Grindr. That was old school.
Then Johnny,
like,
you lied
BBS.
To me.
Yeah, no, it's. Tim and I actually met through a telegram. We are significantly older than Will. We had to update to get on Will's level.
Mm-hmm. It's
but,
true.
Man, it's been a great 4 years.
This is year four.
This is going to be the good year, guys. This is going to be the good year.
This is it. This is the year that the show takes off because Texas actually does well, right? Because Shaka Smart has a year that is make or break for him. Or is it? How important is this year for Shaka Smart? Look at that transition, y'all. Look at that. Boom. Tim?
Oh, all right. Oh, I should have been on regular Skype so I can see if Johnny's pointing at me. Did you point at me, Johnny?
Yes, I did, actually.
Oh.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was the question? yeah.
How important is this year for Shaka Smart?
Incredibly important. And actually, probably the first few months are crazy important, too. So, I mean, whether we're talking about his job status, whether you're talking about Texas just needing some wins as a program, whether you're talking about recruiting, whether you're talking about figuring out how we're going to keep this pretty damn good staff we've assembled together, I think that he needs to win and win credibly big, I guess. I don't know for sure what exact modifier I put on that, but I don't think, for instance, I don't think an 18-13 10 seed in the tournament or 18-13 NIT bid kind of season is going to get the job done. I think he needs to get safely in the tournament. I think he needs to, if they lose the first game of the tournament, at least it's got to be like a really good game, or I don't even know. Like it's got to be probably his best season at Texas, or I don't know that he will stay. So I think that there's a lot of options for Chris Del Gante after this year, and Shaka's going to have to, you know, really get his work cut out for him as far as not just looking good, but also putting together a season that they are top end of the Big 12, fighting for a protected seed. What do they call those? Like, as far as like they have a chance to be like in their geographic area for when they go into the tournament, stuff like that. So I think it's an important year, and pretty good likely won't be good enough.
Disagree, because honestly nothing means anything. Time is a flat circle,
Johnny.
The world just keeps spinning on its axis and none of this matters to anyone, Johnny. I don't know why I'm here.
Yeah, I told you to stop following Nihilist Arby's.
You're never gonna get that, man. You should just stop asking. Yeah. Okay. So
I mean, you're like Friedrich Nietzsche.
Oh, that was good. That sounded like you weren't Googling it right now.
Yeah. You can't disagree that this year is important for him. Like, obviously, you think that he needs to have a decent season.
I mean, I can disagree just because I'm obstinate, but no, it's fair to
that's
say
that's just what Johnny does.
That's true. I just really wanted to throw a branch through the wheels of this bicycle. Yes, it's important. I mean, every year that his buyout gets smaller, his success becomes more important to him living beyond to the end of it or beyond, right? So, yes, I believe it is more important than last year was in terms of make or break. This is the first year in quite some time I've felt like there is, whether it is remote or not, a possibility of a final outcome, for lack of a better term. Right. Like if he goes on and wildly overachieves and makes like an Elite Eight or something with a team that gets a 3 seed or something, he might actually be in line for an extension. But if he misses the tournament entirely and has some sort of, I don't know, call it a 15-17 team or something like that, he might, you know, that buyout might start becoming more doable. So I think where last year there was no realistic option for him to exit the premises by his own volition or otherwise, this year there is that. So sure, in that respect, it is definitely a more important season. I don't know if I would call it make or break, just because it's not like Jason Garrett with the Cowboys where he doesn't have a job at the end of the year if they don't extend him. He still has a couple more years after this if they just keep letting the contract run. So there's a wider path for him to continue being the Texas coach. But yes, it is important. It's more important than it was last year. But at the same time, he might be more set up for success than he was last year, the year before. Mm-hmm.
Johnny, I feel like you're more like Diogenes, one of the founders of cynicism. So
it's a good thing that I am needlessly verbose, because that gave you plenty of time to come up with other things on Wikipedia.
Yeah. Oh, I knew who he was. I just didn't know how to say his name.
All right. Well, congratulations. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. I was like, who's that one philosopher who shat in a barrel and was cynical?
Just one? I think they all shit in a barrel at some point.
No, well, actually, he shat on the street. And I was like, that sounds like Johnny.
Speaking of shitting in a barrel, how's Iowa, Tim?
Well, I'm going to, I guess, here's the kind of thing that I would say.
Oh, beautiful.
I'm just going to fly right past that. It's beautiful. Right now is the time to live in Iowa. The other
it's the one
11
week.
Months and
week.
3 weeks, yeah, are less of a time.
Those soy fields are beautiful.
I kind of am at the point here for Shaka. I really, really, really think he needs to land Greg Brown. I think that Greg Brown possibly represents the most important recruit for a Texas team. You hate to say it. I mean, like, so as far as like most important, like TJ Ford, maybe Daniel Gibson or LaMarcus Aldridge.
KD.
Yeah. I mean, but like even KD was kind of like a luxury, because he was like, Texas already had a really nice class and then they got KD at the end.
I thought Courtney Ramey was Shaka's TJ Ford. Or is supposed to be.
Well, TJ was like a clear 5-star, like you know, one of the best. He was a McDonald's All-American. And to me, Greg Brown is kind of like, because there's a chance that if they go into next year and Coleman and Ramey are both back, which I think they will be, if they're both back and you add a guy like Greg Brown to that, that's an opportunity to really go into a season and feel like, oh my gosh, this we could be really clicking at this point.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the peak of the talent cycle for Texas will be next year. So Greg Brown could very much be the cherry on top. And if they perform like they are capable and they add Greg Brown, that's probably a preseason top 10 team or top 15.
Legit.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I mean, he's incredibly important, if not just for what you're saying, but also in that they only got one or two spots next year. So it's kind of, if they don't get him, who are they going to land? I mean, maybe they may find somebody else, but he's clearly the big fish for them. So, yes.
Well, so that makes it on top of his contract a big year for Shaka Smart, because if he doesn't have a big year, then he's not going to be able to recruit, and Texas is going to have a talent gap in a year where they're not going to have a lot of players.
Well, and he'll kind of be like, if this year doesn't go really well, I'm sorry, I don't mean to, if we're trying to get past this question, I apologize. But if we're, if
this
you
is
think
a podcast,
about it,
we can go as long as we want, man.
Yeah. So, but if you're thinking about it from the standpoint of like, how important is this year? We are legitimately all in on Brown. Like, he has been our number one for the entire time. We have kind of somewhat purposely said to other recruits, hey, we like you. We're in on Brown. Like, I have talked to different recruiters around the country who have heard us say that. Like, we are 100% in on Brown. To the point where we've allowed, like, we have, like, said to other recruits, yeah, we're not, you know, we're good. And the reason to do that is because, as Johnny said, if you know how good you could be with Brown next year, that makes a difference. But from another standpoint, we're all in on Brown. And so when you consider it from like, Shaka sort of understands one of a couple things is going to happen. If we have a crappy year and we don't get Brown, it was going to kind of be all for nothing anyways. Or if we have a really good year and we get Brown, let's fucking go. You know, and I think that just the way that Shaka is recruiting this year, where he's simply shooting for the moon, he's really targeting one or two guys that very much would be program-changing guys to add to what he hopes will be a good season this year. I think that kind of, in my opinion, proves that idea of, yes, he understands how crucial this is, not just to be successful, but successful at a level like where we're going to say, all right, top guys, believe in what we're doing, jump on board because we're going to be really good.
And he's also makes this a big year because of the staff he's put together. If he doesn't have a good year this year and Texas decides to let them go, this staff that he's put together is all for naught, because he brought in Yaklich from Michigan, who is already seemingly having an effect on this team. I mean, y'all can talk about this better than I can. What exactly is Yak bringing to this team, and where are we going to see that?
So Yaklich's thing is he's very much about execution, because his defense is not complex. It is not like he and Mark Adams are sort of an interesting dichotomy, because Mark Adams over at Tech has an extremely good defense that is all about aggressively helping. It's about denying the paint at all cost. It's about they sort of run a zone behind a very aggressive man. Like, there's a lot of complex attributes to it. Whereas Yaklich's defense is in a lot of ways a straight up man defense. There is not much switching. It happens some, but not a lot. There's not much help defense. If it comes, it's extremely late. And their goal is basically run you off the 3-point line, make you take a contested two, and go get the rebound. I mean, at the end of the day, that is the Yaklich half court defense. Now they'll mix in some of Shaka's diamond press as well. That will show up from time to time, depending on how effective it is. But that's where he will make his mark. And you know, if you look at what he did at Michigan, in the 4 years he was before he was at Michigan, they ranked somewhere between 60 and 100 in defensive efficiency. And the 2 years Yaklich was there, they were second and third, or they were third and second, respectively. So if he does that at Texas, and the offense just stays at the level of efficiency they were last year, they're going to be a tournament team. Like, and there's no reason to think that between Yaklich and Shaka, two of the best defensive minds in the country, they can't put together that sort of defensive efficiency.
But it really hasn't been the defense that has plagued Texas, though. It's always been the offense.
Well, last year, it was the defense. The defense faltered in the last half of the Big 12 season, and that's what screwed them. Like, the offense scored enough to win a lot of games in the last half of the Big 12 season, or, you know, conference play. It was the fact that they weren't getting stops. I mean, you go look at that Baylor game where they were up by 20 or whatever. They got a couple more stops there, they win. You know, there's games like that strewn through the last 10 to 12 games of the Big 12 season that the defense is what faltered them, which is sort of ironic because the first 3 years of Shaka was all about offensive issues. And last year, the offense was actually sort of propping them up for a big chunk of conference play.
Well, and our defensive numbers were still better than our offensive. Like, I want to say we were, like, 28th in the country last year as far as, like, overall defensive numbers. But here's the deal, Will. So that's a great question. Like, I think you are hitting on the...
It was a good question. Maybe not great. Right. It was a good question.
No. So you're hitting on the heart of...
average, so that was more than yeah. I was expecting to do.
Shooting for the moon today.
It was a passable question, all right? What do you want from me? But here's... So let me give you an example of what the difference is. So I think that we were 20... Like I said, 28th overall... defensive percentage or efficiency. Michigan was 2. But what that equates to, Will, is about 6 points a game. So if you take that 6 points a game, you know how many games we lost last year by 6 points or less, William?
There's 7 of them.
Is it more or less than Charlie Strong lost by like 2?
It was 10.
Hmm.
We lost 16 games. And 10 of those we lost by 6 or less.
Yeah, I think they were 5 points. Whether it was 5 points or less, they were like 1-6 last year, 1-7.
We were 3-10 yeah. in games decided by 5 points or less. So, I mean, and of course, none of this shit happens in a vacuum. As always, like, you can't just say, whoa, we would have been 6 points better. Like, that's not how it works, of course. But if you're looking for a really simple mathematical way of looking at this, you take their percentages and juxtapose those on our numbers from last year, and all of a sudden we subtract 6 points a game from our opponent's numbers, and we win 10 more games. You know, like, we win 10 games. We win at Kansas. We win at Iowa State. We win at Baylor. We win at home against Tech.
Just like, just lose Snoop, and then you win at Kansas. What are you talking about?
Well, look, I don't want to – who's that? That guy
soon.
Doesn't exist.
It's too soon. to Tim's point – Texas was over 200 spots worse in three-point defense than Michigan last year. Like, Michigan was 6th in the country in a three-point percentage. And admittedly, some of that is random. Like, there's only so much you can do in terms of defending the three-point line, but it's a focus of Yaklich's defense that he runs them off the three-point line or contests it so that they run off. So even if they take it, they're taking a contested one.
Do you know what our three-point field goal defense percentage was in the Big 12?
It was bad.
38.5%. Teams shot almost 39% from three against us in conference. That's fucking terrible. Terrible. I can't even... I can't even... It's so bad.
So bad.
Oh my gosh. It's just mind-bogglingly awful. Mind-bogglingly awful.
It was 2% worse than a ninth team, West Virginia.
Oh my God! It's incredible how terrible it was. So when you start thinking, it is important to say that Texas was in the top 25 percentage of NCAA Division I defenses, and that is objectively good. But Michigan was way better, and I do not think you can say that they had way better personnel defensively. I don't think you can say that they had way better, way better pieces. I don't think they did, but they were way better as far as the numbers bearing out. And Yaklich, what I love about him, to go back to your initial point, Will, he was a high school guy. Like, he was a high school teacher. He was a high school coach, and every single team he's been at, whether it's high school or as an assistant at kind of low level college or in the Missouri Valley or then to Michigan, they always got better. Every single team that he's worked with has gotten better, and they've gotten better fucking immediately. They were better right away, which is exciting because, like, a really good coach, and there's not a ton of really, really, really good coaches around the country, but a really good coach can do that. And so far, his numbers bear out. Like, it looks like he's actually a really good coach, which is pretty exciting.
So what we can expect from Yaklich is an improved defense, improving parts of that defense that were lacking last year, because it was a decent defense, but there were some, obviously, what y'all talk about, some major issues. What is Andrea Hootie going to bring? Because that is a huge steal from the Kansas Jayhawks. What can we look for to see this immediate impact?
So I'm going to say that her impact will be more noticeable next fall than this one, because... a lot of what a strength and conditioning coach puts into, like, what they build happens in the summer, and she showed up pretty late in the summer strength session. I think she is definitely putting her imprint on things right now in terms of the type of exercises they're doing, the sort of science behind what they're doing. She has a different approach than Roos. Not to say that one is wrong and one is right. They just sort of have different approaches to things. She has a very interesting look at sort of the she has like these three different types of exercises, and they're like fatiguing exercises, and there's recovery exercises, and there's these sort of, I forget the term she uses, but it's like exciting exercises where it's meant to sort of energize the body. Like, she'll have them in the strength room immediately before practices. And she'll have them run through these certain strength routines that are meant to sort of, it's a warm up basically. And it's different than going out on the floor and doing static stretches, but she has them doing that. And then they go out onto the floor. And that's something I think she brought from Kansas. And hopefully will be a way to kind of energize the team in the first few minutes of a game. So I think she's going to be really interesting in terms of her ability to help the staff deal with injuries, to deal with fatigue. She has a very, very scientific approach to how she deals with fitness and fatigue and sort of the interplay between the two. But I think the biggest impact in terms of what the players will look like will be, it'll be bigger next year than it is this year.
Todd Wright under Rick was the best strength and conditioning coach in the country. He was truly magnificent. When Shaka brought Coach Roos from VCU, I think Coach Roos is pretty good, right? And I think the players liked him. I think that he did a good job of filling a role that a lot of strength and conditioning coaches do, of kind of being rah-rah during the games, and being, you know, like bringing a lot of this, like, different kind of interesting ways that you can approach strength and conditioning.
And he got that master certification too, whatever it was. Yeah.
Hootie's wonderful. She is truly special. So for instance, there's a guy that works at my school this year that's brand new. He's from South Dakota and was a basketball coach there, multiple times state champion coach, Kansas fan. And he like wouldn't talk to me, because he knew I was a Texas fan and because Hootie came from Kansas. And he was just like, she's the best. And people who know, like people who get it, understand how good she is. So, you know, it's one of those things where, like, if you talk to a casual fan about Luke Yaklich, like, they'd have no idea. But people who know basketball know that this guy knows his shit. She's the same way, only maybe even better, perhaps. Like, she's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Not only that it's a female working in a male sport, that's awesome. I really like that. But it's also like she has the chops. Like she's terrific. So it's going to be, for everything that Johnny said and then a number of other reasons.
Yeah, if you go look at every time she makes an Instagram post or a tweet or something, the comments are full of Kansas fans just distraught that she's not there anymore. Mm-hmm. Like there's so many of them that are like, I can't believe I got to see you in burnt orange, but okay, this sucks. Like you would have thought, like they might have given up Bill Self before they gave up her. Like they are that distraught about losing her. So it's a big deal that Texas landed her.
So Texas has a lot of things going for them this year in terms of the coaching. Shaka Smart is at the point where he should be having his best year. He's assembled a great staff. Texas has supposedly some of the better talent they've had in a while. What is a reasonable expectation for the Longhorn season this year? Let's go ahead and break it down into two things. What is a reasonable ceiling for this team? Like, what excites you about this team?
I mean, I guess, so the way I look at it, and this is sort of, as the preview pieces come out, you'll kind of see this picture form, where, like, I can make a plausible case for Texas finishing anywhere between second and sixth in the Big 12 this year. And there's a handful of things that will determine it. You know, some of it is about Yaklich's impact on the defense. Some of it is about their free throw shooting and rebounding numbers and that sort of thing. But I think the fact that I can make a best case scenario of second in the Big 12. I mean, if you're second in the Big 12, you're probably like a 3 or 4 seed somewhere in that general range. You're playing in Texas or around Texas, your first couple games in the tournament, like that's 20 plus wins in a season. You know, that's a pretty significant jump from where they were last year. And it's, you know, at that point, we're talking about probably definitely Texas or Shaka's best year at Texas. So if we're talking about ceiling, I think second in the Big 12 is about as high as I could go. And that may not be very realistic, but I could at least make a case for it.
Yeah, man, it's so tough. It's so tough. I've been overly optimistic every year. And so, you know, I think for me, ceiling is probably 11-7 in the Big 12, which would be likely good enough for second or third. I think so. For me, that's a ceiling. When you look at the non-conference schedule, Texas should win every game at home pretty comfortably. You know, they have the game against LSU, but that's in the middle of the Big 12 season, so it's hard to really, to think of that one as a non-conference, even though of course it is. But you know, they should win every game at home in the non-conference. They should, you know, I think they should be at, you'd hope they would be at least like 9-3 throughout that part of the season. So I think the ceiling is probably somewhere in like the 22-9, 21-10-ish range. They really should be fighting for the top part of the Big 12. I mean, top half for sure. It should be a goal. Top two would be phenomenal. And, you know, I think the Big 12 this year will be pretty straightforward. I could see the number 9 team in the Big 12 being 8-10. You know, that's certainly possible. So it's tough to quantify some of that stuff with exact numbers. But I think that there's a lot of reason to believe that the ceiling for this team would be competitive nationally, not at a level where like they're going to be competing with the Dukes and Kansases and stuff like that. But for sure a team that could strike a big team if they needed to occasionally.
Then where's the floor? Well, what about this team worries you?
Well, what do they do defensive from a defensive rebounding standpoint? What do they do? Like last year, we were below water with our defensive rebounding percentages, right? So we were underneath our opponents last year rebounding wise. We also lost the three best players at getting to the rim that we had last year. You know, we lost Osikowski, we lost Roach, we lost Hayes. Those are the three guys who got to the rim most consistently. Now, in very different ways, of course, but we lost them. So what do we get for free throw attempts? You know, so there are some questions that if we can't answer them, this team could really be struggling, because there's a lot of ways to defend a team that can't get to the rack. There's a lot of ways to attack a team that can't close out defensive possessions. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to be particularly awful. It would be surprising to me if we're really this bad, but I think a record similar to last year is not out of the question. I don't think we're going to, but I think, you know, a 500 year is not ridiculous to consider.
Yeah, and I think to that point, it would be foolish to assume that Texas will be as good at holding onto the ball as they were last year. They could. But they were pretty good at it last year, like bordering on elite. So while they may equal that, I don't want to take it for granted. I also think that it's possible that even though the offense is probably going to be built on, I'm going to call it pace, but it's more east-west pace, the north-south pace. Like, I don't think they're going to be running up and down the court a bunch. But in theory, they're supposed to be trying to get the ball east and west to create mismatches. And if the ball sticks with guys for too long, then they're going to lose those small windows they have to exploit the mismatches they create. So if they can't take advantage of that sort of stuff, the offense could stagnate and be worse than it was last year. It's possible that some of the guys may not be as adept with Jokic's defense as we would like, and so they don't make the kind of strides we want them to. Rebounding could continue to be an issue. Free throw shooting could continue to be an issue. So there are ways in which this season could go downhill, and they end up, you know, 7th or 8th in the Big 12, and then we're back in this sort of bubble/NIT discussion.
So Texas right now has been picked 4th in the Big 12. Do you feel like that is a good middle ground for where the Longhorns should end up? Is that kind of what you were expecting Well,
I think
team?
It's like the third straight year they've been picked to be fourth in the Big 12. So maybe that's just where everybody has them from last year and they forgot to erase it and start over. What I've been hearing, and granted, this is entirely anecdotal and this is entirely subjective, is I have sensed a vibe from people who follow the sport, who write about the sport, who they're all sort of quietly really optimistic about Texas, but they're a little hesitant to put it down in writing because they know we've all cried wolf enough times at this point that people are going to be like, why are you talking them up? And with for good reason, right? Like they have not lived up to the billing at least a couple times in the last couple of years. So it's sort of, I feel like there's going to be some point in February where if Texas actually lives up to what people think they're going to do, there's going to be a ton of people going, I wanted to say it like 6 months ago, but I couldn't say it because, you know, there is a lot of anecdotal positive buzz around this team that makes me think that maybe this year is actually a bit different, but I have been wrong before.
What made last year so tantalizing was just the hope, or like blind hope, that Kerwin was finally going to take the next step. But I do believe that this year the unquestioned best players for us are going to be Matt Coleman and Courtney Ramey. So this college basketball is a guards game, and if they can not only be our best players but also kind of ascend to a higher level than what they played before, which they've both been fine, but if they can be our best players and they can take another step forward in their own personal progressions, there's a chance we could be pretty good. So I do think fourth is a pretty smart way to hedge right off the bat. Better or worse, who knows? I mean, they could lose one game and go from fourth to seventh, or they could win one more game and go up to second place, you know, so who knows? But I think fourth makes some sense to me at this point.
Well, you talked about Courtney Ramey and Matt Coleman. Let's go ahead and break down the players here, because this team should be one of the more talented teams Shaka's put together. Last year, you had a lot of guys from the class who are freshmen, and they seemed like a good base. Now they have a year on them. One of those guys, Courtney Ramey, let's go ahead and play our favorite game to start every year, 30-10, where we're deciding, hey, is this player going to have 30 minutes on the court or 10 minutes on the court? And then there's the third option, which is 0 minutes on the court. Let's start with Courtney Ramey. 30-10, Johnny.
30. I mean, with all due respect to Tim Preston's adopted son, Matt Coleman, this is Courtney Ramey's team this year. I think this team...
My adopted son, St. Louis and himself.
He's your adopted son, but I am trying to pay deference to Tim's adopted son, Matt Coleman, and say that this is now Will's adopted son, Courtney Ramey's team. That's confusing as shit. So let's just go with Courtney Ramey's going to play 30 minutes a game. As good as Courtney was last year, and for being a freshman, he was really good. He has things to improve, like his free throw numbers need to get better. His ability to finish at the rim needs to get better. I feel, given that he was a 40% three-point shooter, his free throw numbers will come along. And I think if he is, I think he should take some sort of step in the right direction in finishing around the rim. So. And also, he's got that, you know, he's got shades of Junyans, right? He's very Jakovinish in his edge and his not giving a fuck about anybody. He's going to get his shot off kind of thing. Like the right kind of way, right? Like not the selfish sort of way. Like the I have no problem taking this on my shoulders kind of way. I'm really excited to watch what he does. And I think he's the clearest of everyone of the 30-10 game.
Yeah, he's a 30 guy. 30 plus, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if both he and Matt are pushing 30, 35, you know, 33, 35 minutes a game. I think he needs to work on consistency. The first couple of games in the NIT, if you want to look to when he played his best, those first couple of games there in the postseason, he was phenomenal. And then I think shot like 1-for-8 in the final, the NIT. So he was experiencing some of that inconsistency that a lot of players do as a freshman. Sophomore slumps are a real thing. I don't think he'll have it because he's such a guy that as far as his mental makeup and how competitive he is, and you know, to compare that or to add on to that with his kind of innate athletic abilities, he doesn't seem like a guy that's going to succumb to a sophomore slump. But yeah, I think Matt may well still be the most important player, but I think Courtney will be the best player. And I would not be surprised if that bears out in the numbers. I think that Courtney will be up there in points. He'll be up there in assists. He'll be up there in rebounds from the guard position. I think there's a lot of things about him that will strike Texas fans as like, oh yeah, he's the guy. Matt's very good, but Courtney's the best.
So let's go ahead and get to Matt Coleman. Where is he? Obviously.
Yeah, he's a 30 guy as well, certainly. He's the truest point guard. I think it will be interesting to see how he figures out his role as the leader now that Dylan and Kerwin are gone. There's no junior, or sorry, there's no seniors left to say, oh, well, that guy's, you know, obviously going to take the mantle, and we'll see what the sophomore point guard does.
I don't know why you're knocking Drayton Whiteside, who is clearly a senior this season.
So it's the best
player on the team. The most consistent, yes, for sure.
We'll get
to him later.
Okay.
We'll get to him later. Don't worry.
It needs to be his team. It needs to be him really initiating and running the offense and allowing Courtney to take advantage of what he's really good at, which is exploiting mismatches, shooting from deep, just kind of allowing Courtney's athleticism and, like we said, his competitiveness to take over. But, yeah, Matt's a 30-minute-per-game guy, and you hope that at this point Shaka told him 2 years ago, these are your keys, get to driving, and hopefully he makes good on that this year because we need him.
Yeah, I think Matt's clearly a 30-minute guy. I think what I'm interested to watch is because he was a guy who, when he came to Texas, he was a very much a lead point guard, ball dominant sort of point guard. Not necessarily that he shot all the time, but the ball ran through his hands every possession, and he was sort of the floor general. And that's not really the offense they're running now. It's not a single guy. Like, it's more interchangeable. There's multiple ball handlers out there at all times, and they're running a system that's less dependent on one dude barking out plays, right? And so I am hopeful that he comes together and says, okay, all right, I can adapt to this. I think he's very invested in the team. I think he's invested in doing the right thing. And if he can take the sort of ownership to be consistently aggressive within a scheme that's a little different than what he was doing previously, then he can flourish. Because he's clearly a good point guard. Like, if you look at the Big 12 preseason nominations, he's the only Texas guy who got any love. So if they are thinking of him more highly than Ramey, which I'm kind of surprised by personally, then obviously everyone else thinks he's a good point guard as well. So yeah, he's clearly a 30-minute guy.
So the next guy we got on here is your adopted child, Andrew Jones. And by your, I mean, I'm looking directly at Johnny. So everybody who's listening to the podcast obviously knows that I'm looking at Johnny as I say that. Johnny, your adopted child.
I'm at best a godfather. Like, I don't think I'm quite blood related, but you know, I'm going to say Andrew is a 10 guy.
That's sacrilege.
It is. I don't think he is going to get more than 10 or 15 minutes a game this year, which is fine because I don't know that they need him out there, barring some sort of injury. I think he's going to be sort of a sixth man kind of guy, first guy off the bench guy, that is instant offense and plays solid defense, good enough defense. And yeah, he's going to be out there hopefully hitting 40% plus from three so that he can really cause problems with other teams' defenses.
The best news ever was when, if you look at Texas's roster, he's listed as a redshirt sophomore right now.
Really? Yeah, they never announced anything about that. Because the Texas marketing department is fucking terrible this year. They can't do it. They can't put together a scrimmage.
He is a sophomore.
He's a redshirt sophomore, and they didn't even put out a press release. Like, the single most marketable human on the team, the guy who is in national news, they were making fucking t-shirts for him.
Three more years.
Of Rich Software. Yeah, so possibly three more years of him. And they didn't do anything. This is the same group who didn't come up with a fucking scrimmage for the team this year. Like, I don't know what is going on with the Texas marketing team. Actually, I do kind of know. Football sucked all the oxygen out of the room. But they took all of the best marketing people, put them in the football side, and now the basketball side's like, hey, maybe if we make a tweet, we should make a tweet about something. They're gonna have a 1 hour like autograph handshaking session at Bevo Boulevard that they're splitting with the women's team at the Kansas home game. That is the extent of what Texas is doing to promote the basketball team this year. I don't know who the fuck is doing things over there, but Del Conte clearly does not have that shit under wraps, because most of the Big 12 has managed to do a scrimmage open to fans this year, and Texas is like, yeah, maybe some autographs. Maybe some autographs. That's good. That's what we'll do.
That'll be fine. That'll be enough.
So, yeah, 10-minute guy. Sorry.
Tim? Andrew Jones?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, everyone that is a Texas fan knows what he was approaching when we lost him to cancer a couple years ago. And so we all might have delusions of that guy running out of the tunnel and, you know, and being this year's savior. I just don't think it's reasonable. And if we're right and he can play 10 solid to really decent level, approaching a high level ? Hopefully. Wow, what an incredible boon that would be for our team. So yeah, I think Johnny's right. 10-ish minutes. Wouldn't be surprised if he's another guy who's kicking closer from game to game to 20 minutes if situations dictate it. But yeah, I think right now he's probably not a 30-minute guy at this point. We'll see what the end of February brings, and then we'll see what next season brings. But right now, 10 minutes seems...
Yeah, he's not going to be a 30-minute guy this season unless there's some serious injury issues.
Right.
Well, here's another interesting guy in Jace Fabris, who last year started to break out of his role of you're the three-point shooter, you sit in the corner and you shoot threes. What is he this year?
No, he's that. That's what he is. He's a 30-minute guy, I think, almost for sure. He's like 3-point shooting is still going to be his thing, and we need for him to supply that, because as Johnny was talking about before, I still think you would qualify both Matt and Courtney as point guards, or at the very least you'd qualify Courtney as a combo guard who has clear point guard skills. And so with Kerwin, his athleticism gave him an opportunity to kind of to get into the lane no matter what. I don't think Jace is that guy, so we need him primarily for spacing, and then to be a player that can put it on the deck once or twice a game, get into the lane to really give defenders something to think about. But he's clearly our probably most fluid, most talented shooter in the program. Certainly a guy that can get really hot right away. He's added some wrinkles defensively to his game, which was pretty good given how lackluster he was as a freshman. He even became a pretty passable rebounder last year. He got to the free throw line some towards the end of the season. So there's a lot of things to like about his progression, with a clear understanding like, oh, he can get way better. But he's to me he's a 30-minute guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a 30-minute guy, and I think he will show more ability, more desire to attack the paint this year. I still agree that he's definitely a 3-point shooter first, but I think he started to showcase a comfortability with attacking the rim from time to time last year that he will build on and start to finish better. And hopefully that'll help him get some free throw opportunities that he just frankly did not have last year. His defense, I don't think he's ever going to be like an all conference defender, but I think he's going to be a solid enough defender that his offense becomes a clear positive. Like if he's scoring 16 and giving up 8 or 9 points a game, that's a win. So, you know, and if he scores 28 points, then I don't care if he gives up my mom's social security number, frankly. So it's, you know, I think he's clearly a 30 minute guy. Like, I think he is, there are like four spots on the starting lineup that you could pretty much write down in pen. And I think he's one of them.
And this brings up another guy who has an interesting role, and I'll be interested to see if he doesn't get passed up this year, and Jericho Sims, because there's a lot of talent behind him. How do you expect him to play this year? Where is he between 30 and 10?
I think he's the last 30 minute guy, frankly. I think he is starting to show, like last year and the year before, one of the problems he had is that he seemed to, when he would get the ball in the low block or when he would get the ball up near the top of the key, he was predetermining what he was going to do rather than reading what the defense was giving him. And for the first time, I've started to see signs that he is reading the defense rather than just going, well, I'm going to the rim regardless of what happens. So that sort of stuff paired with a clear understanding of his role and not having a guy like Jackson nipping on his heels will probably help sort of him keep his mind right and stay in the right frame of mind. So I think he's the starting big at this point. I don't think it's likely that he gets passed up at any point this year, unless they make some sort of situational lineup change because of who they're playing. I think he's the starting five for most, if not all, of the season. So I'm saying he's a 30 guy.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that Johnny hit the nail on the head with that. If he's not rocking 30 minutes a game, something has gone pretty wrong. And I think if you look at what he did in the NIT, that's going to bear out. I think his numbers weren't staggering. I think it was like 5.7 points per game, 7 rebounds per game in the NIT. But if he gives us those numbers, we'll take that. That'd be great. Like, we'll take that. So even if he just kind of like carries that over into this season, that's exactly what this team needs. Someone they can lob to in the paint, someone that they can trust to get some rebounds, someone that can, you know, that they can feel like, hey, he's going to give us some rim protection. So if he can do those things, that will be,
yeah,
you know, 30 minutes will be his.
I think he and the other sort of wings and stretch fours and bigs, part of what's going to determine their minutes is their ability to get rebounds. Because one of the things that is that has to get replaced this year is Osakowski's rebounding. Because for his sort of ups and downs, he was a plus rebounder, and Texas needs to figure out whether it is a person or two or the team as a whole who's going to replace or supplement that. So Jericho has a big role to play in the rebounding game.
For sure.
Let's get to the guys who are looking to break out this year. And one guy who is probably looking to replace that exact same role, maybe not so much as a rebounder, but sort of as a big guy who can play the perimeter, is Kamaka Hepa. What are we expecting out of Kamaka Hepa this year?
I'm going to call him a 10 guy. So here's sort of the pros and cons of Kamaka, right? Like, he is a very talkative defender. He's got a good basketball IQ. Like, he recognizes what happens in front of him. His anticipation needs some work, and his athleticism is not so much that he can be late on a play. He can't recognize a play late and cover, right? Like, he's got to recognize it in advance and get to the spot where he needs to be. So he's got sort of pros and cons, right? Like, you can't knock a guy, or you can't be negative about a guy who talks on defense as much as he does, effectively, for that matter. Like, he's calling out the right things. So he has some value in that. His shot is good when it falls, and if he can make the sort of standard sophomore jump in shooting that you tend to see from freshman to sophomore year, he can become an effective stretch four in spurts. So he has a potential role to play. I just don't think he's going to sort of lock down that four spot. I think he's going to be more of a bench guy who maybe he starts towards the end of the beginning of the season, but gets, you know, becomes a bench guy later in the season. Like, I don't think he's nothing. I just, if I'm going to put minutes on him in a 30-10 game, I'm putting 10.
Yeah, I guess I don't disagree with anything Johnny says, but I would still probably say 30. I think for the most part, he's the, you know, so we if four guys from the team are most likely to be 30 for sure, Coleman, Ramey, Febris, Sims, then someone else probably has to be 30, and he seems the most likely to me. But I think that Johnny's accurate. Can Kamaka rebound like we need him to? Can he figure out how he can be aggressive offensively somewhere other than the three-point line? If so, awesome. If not, yeah, there's some talented guys that are also on his minutes, so we'll see. But I think he probably, for me, is the most likely fifth guy to be at 30, but it's I'm not wholeheartedly in there.
So let's go ahead and get to Johnny's actual adopted son, Brock Cunningham. Johnny, I'm guessing this is your 30?
Yeah, 100. Can I not put 40? Is that not allowed? No, he's a 10 guy, right? Like I like his basketball IQ. I like the fact that he goes and gets rebounds that other guys shouldn't get. But at the same time, like, he doesn't quite have the athleticism as some other guys. He doesn't quite have the shooting touch that he's got a good shot, but it's not amazing. So he's a redshirt for a reason. So, I think he plays some role. He gets some minutes here and there. But, you know, just given the depth of this team, he might not get a lot of minutes that he might otherwise. So, 10.
Yeah, he's a 10 or 0 for me. And I hope that he, like, listens to the podcast and hates me. And that makes him become awesome. And he becomes, like, our Jared Haas or something like that. I don't know. But, like, I think he actually is the kind of guy with the length and basketball IQ to be pretty damn good, but it's hard to even project 10 minutes a game for him at this point.
Yeah, like if you put his brain in like Kai Jones's body, that guy would be an All-American, right?
Yeah.
So what about Jared Liddell? Guy kind of came in late. What are you expecting out of him this year?
Boy, I like him a lot. I really, really do. I like him a lot. And I think he played a lot of minutes at the four during the NIT. So when he was on the floor, he was doing that. He crashes the boards really hard on both ends of the floor. He showed a pretty decent three-point shot. He gets ball movement. He's an above-average passer for his length and size. I like him a lot. I just don't know if he adds what we need from our four, because I think rebounding will be so important for this team. And if he plays number four at the four spot for us, it would require him to really be a very much plus rebounder for a 6'6 athletic lengthy guy who's not like a space eater, you know? So I he's a 10 minute guy for me right now, although I'll say that begrudgingly, I want him to be a 30 minute player. I really believe in him that much, but I just, you know, if he was 6'8, yeah. Or if he was a little bit more dynamic on the ball, then I'd have no problem saying that. But I'm not sure he's going to bring enough to break into that 30 minute per game, because last year he was like 3 minutes per game for most of the season, so that'd be a pretty gigantic jump. I think 10 minutes makes a lot of sense, and I hope that he gets an opportunity to kind of show what he can do, because when he got comfortable towards the end of the season, he looked pretty good.
I think if there is a 10 guy who is likely to break into the 30 section, it's him. I think the game has slowed down for him significantly. I think he is much more comfortable on the court than he was a year ago this time. I know that privately Shaka has been raving about him. So I feel like if there's a breakout guy, a guy who goes from 10 to 30, it's going to be him.
So I think maybe both Johnny and I are in the same boat, where if you ask us about the first 10 games of the season, Kamaka is probably a 30-minute guy. Gerald's a 10-minute guy. But maybe from game 10 to 30, Gerald could be the 30-minute guy and Kamaka goes back to the 10 minutes?
I don't think I would put Kamaka at 30 in any of those. But, yeah, I think it's...
But like, you can see Kamaka starting early and then Gerald or someone else taking a spot later on.
Sure. Starting, maybe. Gerald might start to begin the season. It's possible.
Oh, God.
But I think here's sort of my philosophical issue here is that I've picked four 30 guys and I don't think there's going to be a fifth 30 guy just because of the depth of the team. And maybe in the
Diogenes.
Yes.
For sure, 100%.
There you go.
That's the cynicism I've been expecting out of you.
That's a good callback, Will. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
That was not patronizing at all. If there's going to, like, I don't think there's going to be a fifth 30-minute guy because there's just too many guys. So, like, it's not, I don't think there's going to be this starting five that is just dominating minutes. So that's why, like, everybody I'm picking from here on out is probably 10. But if there was a guy to grab that fifth 30 minutes, I think Gerald Liddell is the most likely of the guys to do it.
Hey, preach on, my guy.
So, Johnny, why is Drayton Whiteside your 30-minute guy?
Look, I'm gonna throw some math at you, and this math is unassailable. There are two things that are true. Drayton Whiteside has never missed a shot in competition, and Texas has never lost a game in which Gerald Liddell has made a three. So, if that's not a case to have those two guys starting, where Drayton, like Gerald throws the ball to Drayton, he drains a shot, and the next time down, Drayton throws to Gerald, and he drains a three, we're going 31-0, 36-0, whatever, however many games it takes to get to the championship. That's math, man. That's math. You can't argue with math.
We are currently listening to Tim fill up his fourth drink here.
Yep.
But so let's go ahead and get on to the new guys coming in. Which of these guys is going to be the breakout guy? Kai Jones, Donovan Williams, or Will Baker? Who is the guy who is this year playing minutes and doing well? And who is the guy who, give him a few, and they'll do well?
So I'm going to say out of the three, Will Baker is the most likely to break out. Like, I think he is going to be a solid role player. If we were going to get granular, I think he's more of like a 15-minute a game guy. I think he provides some interesting flexibility from the four or five. They could play a five out offense with him as the big in place of Jericho, and, you know, four wings and guards surrounding him. They could have a five out offense that way. That could be used a few minutes a game. I think for him, his issues are going to be, some of it is sort of the standard freshman making the jump to D1 basketball issues of, like, conditioning and, you know, adjusting to a further away 3-point line, the physicality of other guys. So I think he's going to have some sort of normal freshman issues in those ways. But I think he's a very skilled big. I think he has the wherewithal to make make things work as the season goes on. I'm still going to put him as a 10 guy, but I think out of the three freshmen, he's the most likely to make an impact this season.
I think so too. I think so. If we just kind of lump them all together, to me, Baker and Jones are both 10-minute guys. I suppose I would put Donovan Williams as a 0-minute guy right now, although I like his potential and I like what he brings as far as his athleticism and stuff like that. Anyways, but yeah, Will brings the most unique skill set because his shot is so clean, and just because he's so doggone tall, you know, you can't really replicate what he's able to do as far as how smooth his motion is from a guy who you sort of have to guard with another big. So how comfortable opposing big defenders will be, you know, checking someone who's legitimately 7 foot tall and can shoot like he can will be a tough matchup for them. So I like what he has an opportunity to bring. I think Kai is maybe the most gifted player on the team from a straight up talent perspective. He certainly could be a truly special basketball player in the long run. I'm not sure his physicality and the way that he would be able to kind of attack defenses right now is going to give him that chance. But I like where his future probably is. So if you're looking, yeah, I think Johnny's exactly right. Will's the most likely, probably by a decent amount. But don't be surprised if we see flashes of Kai just looking freaking great. And I think that Donovan, if he sticks with it and finds a niche, actually is a guy that could be pretty impactful moving down the road.
Yeah, okay. Please keep on telling me how good Will is.
So I think Kai Jones is, I mean, he's raw as hell, but he's got an incredible amount of athleticism. He's being played right now as a wing, And the fact that that dude is being played as a wing is really interesting to me, at least long term, because if he has a stroke and he builds some strength and has the ability to get to the rim, he's going to be something special. But he is very much a piece of clay right now. Donovan Williams, I think stretch, he's very much, his minutes are going to depend on how well or poorly Andrew Jones plays, because I think he is effectively the next Andrew Jones, question mark. Like, I mean, that's a very rough analogy, but like sort of in that spot of shooting guard who might handle the ball a little bit kind of guy. So, I'm not going to say either one of them redshirts this year, maybe given how deep they are. But I think that Donovan Williams will be one of those guys that longer term is a bigger deal than he is right now.
So let's go ahead. And for everybody who's yelling at us right now, we hear you. Royce Hamm. Why is he a 0 minute player?
There's going to be a game where Royce Hamm is going to give you 9 of the best minutes you've ever seen. And then everyone's going to be like, why is he not playing more? And then he's going to disappear for 4 games after that. Here's the thing. Royce Hamm is the best third big in the Big 12 probably right now. Like, he would be a starter at a lot of mid-majors, some high majors. But at Texas, I mean, he's got to get through Jericho. He's got to get through Will Baker. You know, there's guys in front of him. So, like, it's good to have that sort of guy around. And he's great in practice and helping with competition. And he's clearly a team guy. Like, he's all in on Texas. So you love to have a guy like that around. There's just not a lot of minutes for him. Like, there's 200 minutes in a game, and we've already outlined at least 4 guys who get 120 of those minutes. So there's just not a lot of minutes for a guy like that. So maybe he gets more in the non-conference than he does in conference play. And I'm sure he will bring a bunch of energy and effort and whatnot to the game. I don't think he's going to play all that much.
If you're 6'8", and you're a very nice, you're a nice athlete, but not an incredible athlete, and you don't have a stretch game, and you don't have a particularly refined game offensively, you can't disappear on the glass. You can't disappear with what you bring defensively. And he just still does. Like, he just simply still does. And I don't know that if you're looking at what you would need from a guy like him to say, yeah, let's give him multiple minutes. Let's put him in a situation where he's going to consistently help us, that he can struggle for the stretches that he has. So I like him. It's hard not to like him. And you got to take the staff at face value where they say there are practices where he's the best player on the program. And I think that that's probably true. But I also just don't think if you look at, like, all right, every minute that you give to him is a minute that can't go to Liddell, or a minute that probably can't go to Baker, because they just play a very different role. And I don't know that he can hang right now against good teams' number fives, because he just doesn't really kind of bring that entire package. So I like him. I think Johnny's right that there's going to be some games where he'll bust out 12, 15 minutes of really good play, and we're glad that he's on the team because we maybe win the game because of him. And then there'll be 4 or 5 games in a row where he won't play at all. So, quality player, much better than a 0 minute player guy, in the grand scheme of things. But I just don't know how he fits our offensive system, and I'm not sure he brings enough as a rebounder and defender to say, yeah, let's for sure give him big minutes.
So for everybody who just stayed for this hour-long show, let's go ahead and reward you with some pretend you're getting to know us. This week's question, y'all. Pretend we're football has been assigned to make Texas basketball games atmosphere, quote-unquote, better. How? I'll go ahead and start off with this just to kind of set the tone here. Frank Irwin Center is already known as Club Irwin. So let's go ahead and really, really buy into that. And I'm talking about middle of the game, laser light shows, the lights are down. There might be a basketball game going on, but hell yeah, there's lights, there's flashing strobe lights going on, there's lasers, the old people, they're finally getting up and dancing. The DJ is actually like riling up the crowd. Hell yeah, let's get this Clubber Irwin stuff actually going. Instead of just being a cheeky nickname, let's make it like a legit thing. It's the hottest Tuesday night club in that area of campus.
So this actually works well with, this is my second idea, which was we dose the bottled water with mild amphetamines. Like, I'm not saying we get everybody like methed out. I'm just saying, like, you know, just put a smidge of
a microdose. Microdosing. Yeah, it's in startups these days.
Like sort of what it would be like to down three Red Bulls in a row. Like that much. Not like enough that people have who have heart conditions or really got to worry, but enough that just everybody gets a little irrationally excited about basketball.
That might kill a few people in the front rows, but
we'll get to that one with my first point. So, Tim,
so I really like both of your ideas. I think my idea is I'm so drunk right now. So what I want to do is I think it would be difficult to fundamentally change what Texas basketball games are like, right? We're going to draw shitty crowds. We just are, you know.
Not with free amphetamines in the water, we won't.
Well, you can't advertise
and
that
lasers.
Shit.
And lasers. Yeah.
You can do it, you just can't advertise it. Now, I think you can advertise is we have a BAC minimum. Right? So if you're going to come to the games, you have to, like, they'll have a breathalyzer, and before you can get in, you have to blow at least, like, 0.13 or something like that. Or 0.16, like, twice the legal limit, something like that. You got to blow twice the legal limit before they'll let you in. They'll have a beer garden right on the outside of the facility, and if you're not appropriately drunk, then you can go, like, shotgun 6 or 7 beers, and then you go. Now, maybe we'll start with 40 people in the stands, and there'll be no kids. Right there, at least there shouldn't be kids, but that'll be fine. Like, that will be very similar to what it was in large stretches last year. But I would rather have 13 absolutely rabid fans than 10,000 bored ones. So, right? I think that we're all together on this.
Can I refine your idea a little bit?
No.
There's no. Well, it's going to happen. There's no BAC minimum. However, you get percentage off your ticket price for what you blow.
Ooh, okay.
So you can pay full price.
If you're two times over, they pay you.
So if you don't have any drinks, it's a full price ticket. But if you blow like a 0.2, you get 20% off your ticket or something. Like, we can work something like 40% off. We'll make it a multiplier. That way, so there's going to be some
tickets.
There's going to be some college student who blows a 0.5 before he dies in the stands, but he died in the stands for free.
Or some Estonian kid who's like blowing 0.75 and drove to the stadium that night. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. So
in Soviet Russia, car drives you.
Yeah, this will be the real Uber self-driving test. So my first idea was that we eject the football season ticket holders from the drum, and with assist from Will. We made this a literal ejection. Like, we are going to set up the first 6 rows
right
or whatever.
This way, Mr. Bluehead.
All the people who are just there because they bought football season tickets and they want to see some of the coloreds play basketball. They're gonna be in the first 6 rows, and then we're just gonna the first game of the season. We're going to have them set up, and we're just going to set up like James Bond ejector seats and just like open the top of the drum, and they just get fired out. Yeah, fired out. Like, we could even make it like a bulk thing. Like, it doesn't have to be each seat. Like, it's the whole section.
The new Jetpack Man.
Yeah. Yeah, the Jetpack Man. Yeah, make it the Jetpack Man comes down and picks them up one at a time and just grabs them. And then we let students sit in those seats.
Yeah, I like this idea, partially because I came up with it.
You were a big part of that idea. That is correct.
So Christo Conte, one of our few listeners,
he may not be after tonight.
We just gave you gold, pure gold.
We expect
this to happen within at least the third game of the season. If it doesn't, then we really need a new athletic director.
I want royalties, Chris. Royalties.
I have another one.
Go ahead, by all means.
I think we should let the Hellraisers be the floor cleaners. Like they're the ones who go out there with the squeegees cleaning after every single like dead ball, and then they can just like sort of drip paint and talk shit while they're out there, because chances are they got like a 40% off ticket based on our earlier policy. So
your ass, my dude, your ass.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Just have our, it'll be like yell leaders, except not really creepy.
I mean, pretty all right. creepy.
All right, I think we're going to end off there, y'all. Thank you for pretending we were football for the past hour. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Bitter White Guy, Johnny Brashear, where can we find you?
On Twitter at Bitter White Guy. I'm also in the middle of doing the Barking Carnival season preview pieces. We got three or four of them up now, and I got another like five or so left to go.
They're must read. Check them out, guys.
Johnny Brashear, where in the world is Timothy Preston?
Oh, fuck. Am I doing that again this year? Okay.
One, a two, a three.
I honestly didn't even think about it.
You thought about that last year? Like you had it planned out beforehand?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I did.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Sometimes I did, sometimes I didn't. Like
rent free, Will. Living rent free.
Buddy, you have a timeshare in my mind and in my loins.
That is where Timothy Preston is. Yeah. That's where in the world he is.
Yeah.
And Tim, where can we find you?
Hey, come on over to InsideTexas.com. We have a phenomenal basketball community. A lot of great posters on Twitter at InsideTexasHoop, no S. I don't do a lot of stuff on Twitter, but you can still follow me. Be nice. So, yeah, come hang out with us.
Tim, where can we find you on the basketball court?
Well, I've been doing a lot of running lately, honestly. Sheesh, I'm fast. I mean, I'm not fast, but I'm one of the fastest. But when I'm on the hoop...
To ever do it.
Right. When I'm playing hoops, you know, boy, I'm really comfortable on the outside. I can stroke it from three. I'm equally comfortable on the inside with the big boys. But where I'm most comfortable is right in your fucking face.
You guys can find us in our other podcast right here on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find a podcast. And yes, Johnny, we know what Podbean sounds like. Thank y'all for listening, and we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Rate us 5 stars. Give us those stars. Rate us.
Like us on iTunes? Is that a thing?
Subscribe.